You can have all the Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio podcast with our new app. Just search your app store, Apple, Android, Kindle. We don't care what you use. Search the app store for Explorations Early Learning. Download the app. Give it a try.
It's time to lean back and buckle in. This ain't your grandma's early learning podcast. Then again, your grandma probably didn't know what a podcast was. Hey, moms and dads, puppies and kittens, caregivers and advocates, it's time for Shaken Bones. Here's Dan and Amy.
Hi there. Welcome to the Shaken Bones podcast. I'm Dan Hodgins.
And I'm Amy Ahola.
And this episode is going to be about children's fears in this kind of unrested world. And we are really, really excited because we have teacher Tom with us, Tom Hobson. And I'll introduce him in a minute. And we're hanging out together to look at the untouchable. Sometimes we might challenge your beliefs, maybe even stretch your comfort zone. Most importantly, we want to make you think. We don't expect agreement or disagreement, but we do hope is to shaking some bones. Hey, Tom, just in case if people don't know who you are, and I don't know who that possibly could be, but just in case people don't know who you are, why don't you tell them a little bit about yourself? Because we are so excited that you're here.
Hi, Amy. Hi, Dan. I'm a preschool teacher in Seattle, Washington. That's, in a nutshell, what I am. I think probably people know of me through my blog called Teacher Tom's Blog. And I've been writing that for, 8 years now, putting something up almost every single day. And I think that I get rewarded for that kind of persistence by people have gotten in the habit, maybe a bad habit, of stopping by and reading what I have to say.
And your program is a preschool cooperative nursery school. Am I right in that?
We're a cooperative preschool. Yes, and a cooperative, for people who don't know, is a school that is owned and operated by the parents who enroll their children in the school. And the teachers are the only, myself and our new kindergarten teacher, are the only paid employees. The parents then do everything else it takes to run a school, from administrative work to janitorial. And then the great benefit for me, the wonderful thing, the thing that I like most about it, is that they also work with me in my classroom as my assistant teachers. So I really get to know the entire family, especially when families stay for, you know, 3 or 4 years, which many of them are liable to do. And, I always say, we're not just teaching kids, we're teaching whole families.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes your program unique. Is the fact that you're working with the whole family while they're there, essentially. Yeah.
Well, that's true. I get to see the dynamics between the kids and their parents. I get to hear what they talk to each other about. And the other kids in the classroom I often compare it to when I was a boy, I lived in Columbia, South Carolina, in a neighborhood there, and also in Athens, Greece. And in those places, mom would open the door and say, go out and play. And you'd go up and down the street, and especially in South Carolina when we had the cul-de-sac, you would go door to door, knock on the door, can Johnny play, can Susie play, can Sally play, and finally somebody would come and play with you, but you also knew that there was a parent in each one of those houses, and each one of them had different rules and different ideas. You knew you could go over to Ralph's house and bang on that, their family's organ all day long if you wanted to, but don't touch Mr. Sane's piano. That kind of thing. So you learned, and our school operates that way too. The kids really get a sense of that different parents have different standards and different ideas of the way the world should work, and I think that's really useful for the kids to have that experience.
Yeah, which brings me to the subject I want to talk about with you and Amy, is the world that we live in today is almost present tense, immediate. Results. So whatever happens, children see those results on media immediately. And of course, we just had the horrible thing that happened in Orlando, and we've had many incidents of injustice that's happened all over the world. And children are seeing this, And one of the things that I always comment about is sometimes adults want to prevent children from playing out some of the fears that they have. And I believe that it's important that children be able to reenact some of those fears. What do you two think about this? Have you seen that children during these times of trials and tribulations tend to act out those fears?
I definitely have seen it. I refer to where we live sometimes as, you know, crawling out from under a rock, because I'm in a very remote area. Social media and stuff has made things a little bit more so that the children are getting more of that information. But, you know, I really haven't seen much lately from the children with the events that are going on in the world. But, you know, things that do impact them, deaths, those types of things. In fact, today, even one of our families left early because their grandfather is dying. And so they're going to say goodbye. And so, you know, there was a lot of talk about that because we've had other children who've had that same experience. And so when those types of things happen, they do work it out in their, you know, in their play. So.
What do you think?
It's interesting, Amy. I think I'm in an opposite scenario than you are. We had a major 5-alarm fire within 2 blocks of our house last year. We had a university shooting just across the canal from our school, just up the hill. There was a natural gas explosion that took out an entire major intersection where the kids go to restaurants and they shop and all that stuff. So our kids in our school, that, you know, they have these things happening right there in their own neighborhood. I mean, after that fire, we just all went together and we went down to go look at, once the smoke had cleared a little bit, we went down and saw. You know, there were probably 30 fire trucks down there, and not to mention the ambulances and the police cars and everything else, which, you know, on one hand is like a dream for a little boy or a little girl to get to see all that action. You know, on the other hand, it's awfully terrifying to think that can happen. You know, we had gone upstairs in our building and we had spent a good part of our afternoon just watching the fire from above. And I'm sure some of the kids, you know, with their parents, and I'm sure some of the kids spent many, 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 many evenings talking to their parents about their feelings about that. But I do remember and so we did. We've acted out during that time. We acted out firefighters. We acted out, you know, the helpers in particular. One of the great things about that experience was going down there, and as soon as we stood behind the barricade, one of the firefighters came over to us, took off his helmet, and started telling us what had happened, how it had happened, how many trucks were there, asked the kids if they, you know, some kind of quizzed them a little bit on their own knowledge of fire safety, and then said to us, and now it's time for you all to go inside. The air is poisonous here. So it was, but it was a great experience to be able to do that with the kids. You know, I'm thinking back actually to 9/11 when my own daughter was young, and I remember going into that classroom the next day, and I watched the boys making towers with blocks and flying their airplanes into them over and over and over again.
Yeah, Tom, I saw that too. I was just thinking the same thing. When 9/11 occurred, I think there was probably more tower building than I've ever seen, and of course more knocking them down with planes they had made, and then people falling all over the place, dying, the children trying to drag them off. And kids were always yelling, well, we're going to take you where it's safer. We're going to take you where it's safer. So they actually were practicing some of the things that they saw, not only the bad things, but also the helpful things that occurred.
Well, I know that's that famous advice Mr. Rogers gave us. You know, I think it was his mom, or maybe it was one of his relatives when he was growing up. They said, you know, when there's tragedy in the news, look for the helpers, because there's always helpers.
Yes. Yeah. So I find that children do need to act out some of the drama that they see, and through that drama, they often act out their fears. I keep thinking even going to the doctor's or clinic to get a shot. They often play hospital play and get you involved in being sick so they can give you a lot of pretend shots, essentially, all over the body. So, yeah.
We always get out all of our, you know, toy medical supplies. Well, we also have real medical supplies, you know, some clean syringes and feeding bags and things like that. Whenever a child has surgery or has a family surgery, I try to make sure that next week that stuff is available in the classroom for the kids to interact and do with as they please.
We have a lot of that kind of stuff too. And just this week, one of the little girls was giving my husband, Alan, about 50 shots in a row. And by that time he's like, oh, this hurts. And she's like, pull yourself together, man. Get with the program.
Yeah. I know once last year, there was a child that was building a coffin out of blocks, and He had asked if I would be the one that would lie down and pretend to be dead that day. And I said, well, you'll have to tell me exactly what I need to do, because I haven't experienced that yet. But he knew exactly what he wanted me to do. Yeah. And he started yelling at other kids saying, come on over, we got to throw dirt on him. You know. Yeah. So there is that variety of trauma, essentially, that children have seen and heard and want to respond in some way through their play. And I worry that there might be adults who think that perhaps we want to keep children from not playing those experiences, when in reality it's quite essential to make that happen. What do you think we need to say to adults regarding their fear about children playing that kind of behavior?
I think that one thing to remind adults is that when we have something difficult that we want to work through, we find one of our friends, somebody that we're close to, and we talk it out. And so we talk through, you know, potential scenarios, and the way children work through things is through their play. So they play through potential scenarios to see what, you know, to relive something or to practice how they might handle that situation if it were to occur again, or just to work through their feelings of the situation that's already happened.
Oh yeah, no, I agree, Amy. It's very similar. It's not a lot different than you know, the gunplay we see when kids are, you know, playing guns, or the beauty play when you see little girls dolling themselves up and putting on the princess dresses and crowns. They're clearly working on something that they see as important in this world, and they're definitely trying to come to grips with it somehow.
Yeah, and I'm often worried that perhaps children are being exposed to more media than they're capable of handling at times too, because they, as you both know, children often frequently think that if an earthquake occurs in another part of the world, that it's definitely going to impact me also, because they're so egocentric in thought. So the more media, more coverage they see of some of the tragedies that occur, I'm sure that the larger the fear develops. So I think part of helping families is to maybe think about how much that is being exposed to children. What do you think in terms of the media?
I think that's definitely true. I have mixed feelings about it, because some of it's going to get through no matter what.
Right.
At the same time, you know, when, again, go back to 9/11, when that happened, I happened to be traveling with my wife, and my daughter was 2 or 3 at the time and was staying with my mother-in-law. And she specifically turned off all of her media during that time. And so Josephine was not aware that it had happened, and we didn't talk to her about it. And I, you know, looking back, then probably she was 6 or 7, and we were actually in New York City. And I said, hey, let's go look at where the Twin Towers were. Let's go look at, you know, where the hole in the ground is. And we started talking about it. She suddenly looked at me and she says, do you mean that happened when I was alive? And yeah. I said, yeah, it happened when you were about 3 years old. And I told her the story, and she was so mad at me. She was really, really angry. She said, I need to know these things. You have to tell me. And and ever since then, she's, maybe every kid isn't that way, but my kid was that way. She has always wanted to know the truth. Everything from, you know, personal finances in the family to, you know, sicknesses to everything else. You know, she's 19 now, and she's still that way. She doesn't want to be kept in the dark. And You know, I think part of it too is what is your kid like? And because some children really do want to just cover their ears and block it out. It's I've got one little girl right now who, if you mention a volcano, she will run screaming. Even the subject of volcano comes up, she starts crying and she'll turn her back. And we've got her to the point where she'll cover her ears because we talk about volcanoes a lot at school. You're always trying to stay out of the lava, stuff like that. I mean, that's one of the classic games. And, you know, we've got Seattle surrounded by volcanoes. So every time you look out your window, you're looking at Mount Rainier or Mount St. Helens or someplace that might erupt. So I think a lot of it is just you got to play it by ear. I don't think there's any hard and fast rules about it other than, you know, I think that it's the thing about things like 9/11 or the Orlando shooting or any of these tragedies is the relentless 24-hour-a-day news coverage. That's what I think we should not just be keeping children away from. We should all stay away from that.
Right.
Get your news for, you know, spend your half hour, watch the evening news or whatever it is, read your blog site that where you get your news from, and then put it away till the next day because it makes us crazy. It really does.
You know, I think also, Tom, that sometimes adults feel that if they're saddened around children, that's probably not the right emotion to display in front of them. And I'm a believer that it's really important to show children the different emotions that we have. And so when we're angry and upset, for example, with what happened in Orlando, I think that's important for children to see you as a person, especially if you're a parent of a child that's attending preschool or young child. I do believe that the bombardment of the constant media approach to those events are not healthy for anyone in terms of that. But to hide a feeling and emotion is probably an injustice to children. Do you think so too, Amy, about that? Or?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, it's the elephant in the room. The second you're not real and authentic in front of children about something, then it's a secret. It's something that we don't talk about. And then there becomes this unhealthy vibe that comes across. And then children are afraid to show their true emotions and how they really feel because what's being modeled for them is, okay, you know, it's not okay to be angry or it's not okay to be sad in front of people. When in reality, you know, we're so much healthier when we do express all of our emotions.
I think sometimes we forget that, you know, we're so focused on the kids, right? I mean, we're so focused. I love the way you put that. It becomes a secret. And we get so focused on it, we forget that we ourselves are fully formed human beings. And we have a right to our feelings. And part of it, like you said, role modeling not only the feelings, but our expression of those feelings. Being able to talk about your anger without being violent. Being able to talk about your sadness without it being debilitating. Being able to talk about your joy and happiness at the positives that always invariably come out of these tragedies, we hope.
I'm wondering if families might need some support when it comes to these kinds of tragedies that occur throughout the world in terms of what to say to children when they ask questions. For example, a child the other day in a shopping mall, I heard the child ask his mom, "How come people are always shooting people?" And the parent didn't know what to say, so she didn't say anything. So I'm wondering if there might need to be some guidance with that approach.
I'm thinking about that. Actually, reminds me. I have a friend who's a child psychiatrist, and he works with a lot of young children. And said the easiest session I ever had in my life was an 8-year-old boy who came in, sat down in the chair, and said, "I'm bad because I'm sad." And he said he looked at the boy and he said, "Well, you just saved your parents years of therapy. You just saved a ton of money on that because that is what it comes down to." And that's what I talk about when I talk to children about these tragedies or any kind of tragedy. Why does somebody hit me? I mean, that too. It's usually because somebody's sad and feeling lost and alone and unloved. And as long as we are loving, as long as we are reaching out and connecting with one another, we're doing the right thing. I'm not going to say it doesn't happen to us and that we won't get sad, but not knowing how to deal with your sadness, because a lot of people say, oh, it's anger, but I really am a firm believer that anger is a secondary emotion. And, you know, you hear about all the time, and this is, you know, you always get in trouble when you talk about gender, but, you know, we always think about women as expressing more sadness. And, you know, the women are more likely to commit suicide, men are more likely to express anger and go commit homicide. And I always tell women that one of the challenges you have dealing with men is you've got to let us get through our anger before we can get to the real feeling underneath it. We go through our anger, and then we realize it's either fear or sadness that's making us angry. And I try really hard to get through it fast, but that's sort of how I've been conditioned, I guess. So I talk to the kids about it's because somebody's really, really sad.
Yes. Yeah. And I think also it gives permission for that to happen. Yeah. That the sadness and the anger and the act of surprise or whatever is just part of what happens. And people respond differently, and that approach can be troublesome for adults, but it's important for children to recognize that we do have those different emotions, especially when it comes to things I find with myself when I feel that I don't have any control of it, over it in some way, or frustrated because I want to help but I'm not sure what direction needs to take place. That those kinds of fears overwhelm, you know, some of the most common sense approaches that we do with children and other members, other adults in terms of that.
The other thing that, you know, sometimes when children ask questions like that as well, the other thing that I do sometimes is I ask them, well, you know, and when I don't know, I'm honest with them. You know, I let them know, I don't really know. What do you think? Why do you think somebody might do that? You know, and bring it back again to the hitting or things that they might do so that they can see, you know, that sometimes it does happen on a bigger scale for bigger people.
I think another thing that's important is, you know, because sometimes they're coming to you for assurance. Mm-hmm. And they're worried about it happening to them or to their loved ones. And I know that, you know, maybe this isn't, I don't know if this is the right way to go or not. I often just say, I assure you, I won't let that happen to you. And that's maybe I'm not speaking out of truth. I'm speaking out of my full intentions, because I will do everything in my power to not let those bad things happen to those kids. But sometimes I think that's what truth is we speak out of our intentions rather than maybe our fears.
Well, and what it says to children is, I'm going to make you as safe as I possibly can. Mm-hmm. Beth Voss used to say, I would, to children, she'd say, I would lay my life down for you if I had to. And I think what it says is, I'm here to make it a safe world, or at least as safe if I can make it for you. And I think that they are looking for that kind of reassurance.
Absolutely, and we owe it to them.
You definitely.
Yes.
Is there anything, because we're almost at the end of this segment already. I'm really wondering whether or not there are certain things that we need to look at in terms of helping children through some of the fears that they have of what's going on in our world today. Are specific things that we need to address, or is it just to create a climate that says, I know it's scary and I'm going to try to make it safe for you? What do you think?
I think, you know, I have a hard time thinking in terms of constructs like that. When it comes to these kind of emotions and everything, it's every single one of them's different. Every single child is different. Every family is different. I think just like you said, I think letting them know you're in a safe place right now. I'm not going to let that happen to you. Let's talk about it. What do you feel about it? Let them play. Let them express their fears and their feelings. And let them explore it, because it's like everything else. Unexplored things are secrets, as Amy said.
And I think like Tom said, you know, it's going to be a different situation with, you know, different events how much a child has seen or heard. So every situation is going to be a little bit different, and just making sure that we're providing a safe place for them to come to, you know, to come to play things out or to talk with us if they need to.
Yeah, and again, I want to reiterate how important it is, we've all talked about this, how important it is to allow children to act out through their drama, through their play, some of the anxieties that they have. And some children don't seem to notice at all what's happening around the world. And then there are others that are really sensitive to those components and need it more frequently. So part of it is just hanging around. Children to look at what they need in terms of that approach.
Right.
Well, I want to thank Teacher Tom especially for being with us in this session. Thanks so much, Amy, and I both want to thank you for letting us shake some bones. If you have questions or want continued discussion, you can email me at dkj5075@aol.com or Amy at...
You can reach me at amyahola@hotmail.com, or you can find me on Facebook at Child Central Station.
And how about Tom? What about Teacher Tom? Can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, just, if you get probably the best way is through the blog, the Teacher Tom, or the Facebook page, Teacher Tom. Everything's Teacher Tom. So you can find me that way.
And thanks for listening.
Yep, thank you.
This has been Shaking Bones. Dan and Amy will be back next week for more Bone Rattling. Stay tuned.
Hey, you want to support all the Upstairs Studio podcasts? It's as simple as this. Use our Amazon link when you shop Amazon. We get a small percentage of what you spend. You don't pay any extra. You get your stuff from Amazon. Everybody wins. Where do you find the link? Well, it's on the Explorations Early Learning app. You can find it on the Explorations Early Learning website. If you don't find it in those places, just get a hold of Jeff on Facebook or via email, and he'll hand deliver it to your inbox. Thanks for your support. Bye-bye.